Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington and Kristen Knapp is joining me today. How are you?
Hello. So good. It's always so fun to do these with you, Doug.
It's a blast. We haven't chatted in a little while, so we caught up a little bit and that'll be in the sound check. And today we're going to talk about happiness, specifically community and connections. And this is part four of the series. It's been going on for a while. I'll skip some details, but Carl and I started on this idea in 2022, and the episodes didn't come out for like 3 years later after Carl left the podcast. So we're resuming it at a very slow pace, but we're getting it done. So I asked Kristen to join me because I know that community is a huge component of your life in general, but like when you found the Phi community, it changed some things for you. So today we're going to go over a few things. So number one, the Harvard longitudinal study from the 1930s and 40s, and it spanned something like 80, 85 years, something like that. It might still be going on.
It is. It's still going on.
And then we'll talk about superagers and the one thing they have in common, and there will be a specific definition about superagers. And we'll talk about Kristen's experience with finding the Phi community and then building your own community. We'll also mention the importance of making new friends, especially for early retirees. And then this might ruffle some feathers, probably many feathers, but we'll have sort of a call to action for introverts, and you'll have kind of a specific task. Now, I'm going to jump ahead just super quick, but are you an introvert or an extrovert, Kristen?
You know that Myers-Briggs test? I took that years ago and it told me I was an introvert. I think I was for a long time. Can people change? Maybe I changed. Maybe that changed because I definitely was for a very long time. But my job, because I work in TV, has kind of forced me in another direction. So I definitely think at this point in my life, I would call myself an extrovert.
Okay. Yeah, but I would have assumed an extrovert in people that hang out with you would think that too. I think people can change. And I think even if you're an introvert, like many people in the community, which is one of the reasons we're going to call it out, they self-describe as introverts, but some of them really enjoy like meeting people and being in a group and chatting. They just need to recharge later. So we won't get into definitions and all that stuff, but I think you could shift and kind of go in and out. And certainly it's a spectrum of like a characteristic and what you want to do. And maybe sometimes I'm in the mood to socialize and other times I just want to be alone a little bit more.
So what do you characterize yourself as then?
I think I'm an ambivert. I think I used to say introvert and maybe I like shifted, but yeah, I think I'm more in the middle. And most of the personality tests, I end up right in the middle of two characteristics, usually like one to two of them. So I could kind of adapt a lot better than, maybe not better than other people, but I easily adapt from one to another. So when I had the Myers-Briggs or others that I've taken, I'm like, it doesn't really tell me too much. And I also don't want to get painted in a box because you remember, you're like, oh, I'm an introvert and you remember it still. And it's like, well, you could change, do whatever you want. So, okay, ready to get into it. So we have a couple things that we want to lay out. So there's a few studies that I'm going to reference. This is an occasion where I did some research, and I will give a shout out to the Plain English podcast because it was a main reference. And Kristen, you had not listened to that podcast before, but you checked out these episodes. And what do you think of the host and how he works with the guests and all that?
I had never heard of this podcast. I thought it was fabulous. I mean, the way that he's able to take these ideas and present them in a really clear and easy to understand fashion. I haven't had a chance to listen to other shows yet, but I'm going to. So thank you for turning me on to this.
Yep. So we'll link up if people want to check out those episodes. But essentially, in these cases, we're going to break down a couple of the studies. But you could go back to the episodes, and basically the host is Derek Thompson, right?
I don't remember.
I get him confused sometimes. So plain English, and basically he interviews the people that either wrote papers or are closely related to the studies in some capacity. So this Harvard study is a very popular one, or it became like very well known. So it started in 1938, and it was actually two studies that started but didn't know that they existed. So there was a Harvard cohort, and those were 19-year-old male graduates from Harvard.
Undergraduates.
Undergraduates.
Also white.
Yep. So not, it's privileged. Very. And so that was one cohort. And then there was the Boston inner city cohort. And these were teenage boys from Boston's poorest neighborhoods and troubled families. And they were chosen to see how children with so many strikes against them managed to stay on a good path and out of trouble. And Kristen, why don't you cover the methodology of how they did this?
So again, these were two completely separate studies. They didn't know the other one existed. So eventually they combined them, and they ultimately ended up following these men and later their wives and children for over 8 decades. Apparently this is not a common thing, the fact that this lasted so long. So researchers used everything from intensive interviews and questionnaires to follow these people, from modern brain scans to DNA tracking. They did blood draws to monitor their physical and mental well-being over a lifetime. So I think what they found was really interesting, Doug.
And it wasn't career achievement, money, exercise, or even a healthy diet, even though those certainly matter. But the single most predictive factor for a healthy, long, and happy life is good relationships.
Incredible, right? So they coined this term called social fitness. So they basically said that was the main thing that all of these happy, healthy people had, social fitness. So like physical fitness, relationships require ongoing exercise and maintenance, so that the participants that had the warmest, most active connections with family, friends, and community, they found that they're the ones that stayed the healthiest and also lived the longest, which is fascinating. They kind of mentioned that there's a lot more studies these days coming out that are finding the same thing too. So this isn't like some one-off here.
And was this like surprising to you when it was pulled all together in the podcast episode, or had you seen this before?
I've heard some whispers, you know. I've really been diving into health and wellness in the last few years. So I've definitely heard things about how being social and having close relationships is really important for our health and wellness. But this one kind of dove into it a little bit more and explained some more things than I'd heard in the past, which was super interesting.
For a few years, I was listening to like the Huberman Lab podcast and a few of the others, and just like the really optimizing and getting into the details of whatever the fucking protocols that you're supposed to do every morning and whatever. Jump in cold water and
it's
look at
much.
The sun and all
it's
that
too
shit.
Much, Doug.
And it was really fun at first because you're like, I can take control on some of these things. And then a couple of the episodes, you know, I think I tried a couple of the ideas and protocols, and I was like, well, this didn't seem to work at all. Like, I got no benefit. And then eventually I kind of lost steam. I think a lot of people got tired of the over-optimization and like, here's the exact thing you're supposed to do. I'll skip many details, but basically I was just like, I'm not going to do all this shit. It's probably better if I just get enough sleep and drink a little bit less, which I do a poor job at both of those. So I'm like, all right, if I'm not going to do those, then trying to get these 0.5% better is kind of a waste of time. So this completely is like right in the face and contradicts it, where it's just like, hey, if you have good relationships, yeah, the other stuff matters. You probably need to, you know, get a handful of steps and, you know, don't eat super horrible food. But at the end of the day, it's like, if you have good relationships, that's better.
So then the question was posed like, but why, right? And it sounds like this is very much on the forefront of science right now. Like, this is something that they're trying to figure out, but they made some suggestions as to why good relationships could be physically protecting our bodies. And the first one was that they're stress busters, because relationships are like emotional shock absorbers. When something stressful happens, you talk to a good friend or maybe a partner, and that calms us down. It calms down our central nervous system, taking the body out of this chronic fight or flight state, which is obviously unhealthy for our bodies. And that was just one of the examples.
The other is around physical healing and pain management. And basically, the study found that people in warm, connected relationships literally heal faster from wounds and report experiencing less physical pain when holding the hand of a loved one.
That is freaking fascinating. I hadn't heard that before.
And I mean, it does make sense, you know, when you're thinking of, I don't know, someone who's lonely versus someone who does have support around them, even if it's maybe they're states away, but if they're actually in the room and they're able to like hold your hand, it makes sense to me. And then
from now on, whenever I do something painful, I'm making my husband hold my hand, like for reals.
And I wonder if you could like add, like the more people, like the less pain, you could like hold hands.
Hold more hands.
Several. Yeah, yeah.
So the other one was about inflammation and immunity. They said that chronic loneliness keeps the body in a low-grade constant state of inflammation, which weakens immune functioning, which accelerates aging and disease. So my question again would be, why? But it sounds like these are all things they're looking into. So just really fascinating stuff.
And I guess, I mean, it's just like, you know, the chronic loneliness, it's stressful. It's like stressful on the body, even if it's psychological, mental, but it's overall like a stress on the body. So I could see that.
You know, something else that was pointed out, though, that we should say, like loneliness and being by yourself are two different things, right? You can sit quietly and whatever it is that you want to do. I don't know, watch TV by yourself, do some meditation, whatever. You're by yourself and you're content. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about these feelings of loneliness. They said that there's a lot of people now in college who are surrounded by so many people their age who feel incredibly lonely. They explored that a little bit, but they're saying people now feel lonelier than they ever have, like when they're doing this research and looking into the numbers and seeing that it's fascinating because at this point in history, it's easier to talk to people on the other side of the country than ever before. It's easier to see their face than ever before. But despite all of that, we're not really getting together in person. And it sounds like that's what's really important here. People are doing less and less of that. So it was fascinating to me that these college students, again, despite being around people 24/7, are indicating they feel incredibly lonely. Not all of them, but more of them than ever before. So it's not necessarily about sitting alone. It's just more about engaging with people one-on-one. Does that make sense? Did I explain that right?
Yes, 100%. Great distinction. Yeah, and like mentioning the introvert stuff from before, an introvert, maybe they need some time to recharge and they're reflective. Maybe they like the quiet or whatever number of things where you're like, I just want to be alone for a little while. They don't necessarily feel bad and lonely. They're just like, I need some time to recharge and I want to do some stuff by myself, which I could totally appreciate. Ready to move on to the super agers.
So this was fascinating as well. So this Dr. Sandra Weintraub, she's a neuropsychologist and lead scientist at Northwestern University's Center for Cognitive Neurology and Alzheimer's. So she's doing all these studies, and she's looking into these people as they're aging who are either dealing with some mental decline and some forgetfulness, but also talking to people who were just worried about it and trying to prevent it. And she started finding that there were some people who were a lot older that really didn't have any issues at all. So that's kind of what started this. And she started digging into it. So the big question became, why do some people's minds remain as sharp as a 50-year-old's well into their 80s and 90s, which is incredible. So she called those people super agers. After a quarter century of tracking these folks, she wanted to know, what's the actual secret to avoiding this cognitive decline? So it was really a lot about memory is what she was looking into.
And we'll specifically mention the distinction. So superager is a specific definition, which we'll tell you in a second, around memory. It's not the people that live to be like over 100 or 120 or something like that. That's a different thing. And Dr. Weintraub mentions that she just wanted to have like their own definition that they're operating from, and it made the study sort of clean to do. So let's talk about the actual test. So the people in the test needed to be 80 or older and score at least 9 out of 15 on a delayed word recall test 30 minutes after hearing the list, which I have anxiety just thinking about doing such a test.
I do too.
we should do it. Yeah, I was like, oh shit, I wouldn't want to do this. The benchmark, so the memory performance puts them as a superager completely on par with healthy individuals in their 50s and 60s, so like 20 to 30 years younger.
Incredible.
And it's basically like their mind is as sharp as someone
30 years younger.
Yeah. And the cognitive decline, I guess she says it's a bit of a myth. And the variation in how 80-year-olds perform is really massive. So basically, the decline is sort of linear generally. But what happens is the standard deviation gets bigger as people get older. So everyone, again, it's kind of linear. You know, when you hit your 40s or 50s, like, it's a little harder for us to, whatever, remember where our keys are or something like that. Or sometimes I walk into a room and I forget what I walked in the room for. I blame part of that on like phones and stuff. So if I don't have my phone on me, like if I'm out in the woods or a cabin, like my memory is a lot better. I'm not distracted all the time. But anyway, as you get older, maybe you hit your 70s and you forget more. And we've seen this in friends, relatives, etc. And basically, these folks that are performing so well, they're 80, 85, whatever, they're quite old, but they're crushing the test. So
Can we talk about standard deviation for a second, though, just to kind of dumb it down?
Yeah, for sure.
So the idea is that, you know, those of us who are, I don't know, 40s, 50s, whatever, our memories pretty similar. Like, there's not that wide of a span. But then what happens is as we get older, you look at 80-year-olds and they could go from like no memory at all to the superager kind of memory. So there's a much wider gap as we get older. So the idea is we're not all sort of declining equally. I just try to explain it a little bit better. Just I like to dumb things down a little bit. Speak in English a little bit better for those that might be like, what exactly does that mean? No offense to any of our audience. That's just kind of like, I like to say it out loud because then I understand it better.
I don't even know what the words are. I was just saying it was written on my screen, but I just said that. No, that's perfect to break it down that way. And you explained it really well. So yeah, very large variation as people get older on the highest memory folks and the lowest memory folks, which is the worst way to say it. Sorry. Go ahead.
So here's what got interesting. You know, if you think about this for a minute, okay, let's look at, you know, 80-year-olds who have fantastic memories. Like, what do they have in common? And I would assume, well, they probably all exercise and eat well. And they were looking for what common threads emerged with these people: diet, exercise, lifestyle. Hardly any. That was the answer from the data, is there were hardly any common threads at all. These superagers, they didn't share a specific diet. Some ate really clean. Some did not. Some exercised. Some did not. They didn't necessarily share specific medications. They didn't necessarily, you know, have the same diseases or not. Like, there were very little parallels here. I mean, some of them drank. Some of them didn't. So,
and that was the one common trait across these super agers. They're highly social, they're outgoing and gregarious.
So just like that 80-year Harvard study, this super ager study, which was 25 years, found that one lone behavioral and personality trait uniting every single one of these super agers: highly social, outgoing, and yes, that word, gregarious, which is really interesting. I would have never expected that they wouldn't have had any of those other commonalities. These particular people, these super agers, they all place an immense value on deep relationships. They're really active in their communities, and they also protect their personal autonomy.
And I think one thing that was mentioned in the podcast episode, Plain English, they talked about how having those strong social connections, maybe someone's really active in their church or their Phi community or whatever, you have to keep track of a bunch of names and people and their stories, which does, I mean, that uses your brain to put together complex ideas and all that kind of thing. Versus if you, let's say you retire and then you stay home alone and you're not conversing, you're not hearing stories, you're not chatting with people. Humans are meant to be social. So like that's really stagnating a part of your brain that should be really active. So when you think about it in that way, it totally makes sense.
I want to hear your thoughts though on these clickbait stories that I've seen a lot in the last year or so. Don't retire early because you'll die sooner. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think those are like total bullshit. I mean, it's certainly clickbait and people check it out. And then like Dave Ramsey will say, see, that's why you don't want to retire early. I don't know what he says, but this seems like something Dave would say, right?
Sure.
but I think it's that specific thing where people retire and then they stay at home and then they stop socializing. And the thing that the stories try to emphasize is that it was the work that was providing the value, which work can provide value and purpose in the socialization, but there's a lot of other ways to be social. So it definitely doesn't have to be going to work, especially if you don't like your job and you're not getting much out of it. Yeah, certainly you can quit. But yeah, I think those stories are kind of silly. And I think people use it for confirmation bias to be like, oh yeah, I want to keep working. I don't want to die. If you retire, you're going to die, which is obviously not true. So
we think those people, probably the ones that do retire and die, are probably people that just came home from work and didn't do anything, right? And that's not the Phi community. We're all pretty proactive people. I mean, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I think, obviously, we didn't do a study. It's just our
opinions?
Impression. Yeah. I only read the headlines. I don't even read the whole stories. So I'm really just making stuff up. Do you have anything else to add on this?
I've read those and definitely made me think a lot about purpose, you know, because I imagine a lot of that is tied into purpose too. Because these are things that I worry about for some people in my life that I feel like are going to struggle when they stop working because they're not great at being proactive at like finding other things to do or maybe developing new relationships. It would be interesting to see if there is a study on that. Like these people who retire and die quicker as a result, like what really is that? I mean, maybe there are several things that play into it, but clearly by reading these studies, this would be a big one. I mean, that only makes sense. Got to stay social.
Yeah. And it seems like it's a very low downside to be social. So
right.
If you're good, let's move on to finding new community and really talk about your story a little bit, Kristen. So when did you find the Phi community and how did it find you?
So I figured out what the FIRE community was 2018, 2019, started listening to all the podcasts, reading all the books, just really went down all the rabbit holes. But I never went to my first in-person event until 2022. And that was a Camp Phi. And it really was life-changing. And I mean, it's not a cliche, like it really did change my life. I have never in my life felt like I fit in anywhere. I'm adopted. So I think some of that plays into it. Like I didn't feel very similar to my family. I grew up in poverty, but I was smart and I was in the smart kid classes. And for whatever reason, better or worse, a lot of those kids are the ones that came from families with money. And I always had this inferiority complex. Like I just never felt like I was part of a group. I always just had a random friend over here, another one over there, and whatever. That's followed me through my whole life. So going to that first camp was, it's hard to explain, but by the end of the weekend, I'd lost my voice because I just, I was completely exhausted because I was the first person up every morning and the last person to bed every night because I didn't want to miss any of the conversations. And it was the first time that I really felt like, oh my God, like these are my people. This is my tribe. And I've been back to like 9 or 10 campfires since then. I can't get enough. Eventually, I said, man, I really want this more often, more regularly. I don't want to have to wait to go to camp. How do I do that? And I saw that there was a Choose Phi local group on Facebook in the St. Louis area where I live, but it was kind of dead and nobody was doing anything with it. It's just my personality type to kind of be an organizer. So it was very easy for me just to be like, well, I'm just going to do it. Like, why not? Somebody's got to do it. I'll do it. So I took that on, and early on, you know, we'd had 5, 6, 7 people, but now we regularly have 50, 60 people a month come to our monthly meetings, and we have a lot of spinoffs. We do like a ladies' coffee, and we have a brewery get together every month, and we still do case studies, and we do educational content, but I get to be around these people all the time. And these are the people that have really become my dearest friends. Living in St. Louis, I'm a transplant. I didn't grow up here, so I don't have like old friends in this area. And honestly, I don't know that I would have continued to have them anyway, because like I said, I just never really fit in anywhere. But these are my people. These are my people. And it's been really extraordinary. I've changed my life so dramatically in the last few years. I moved from full-time work as a broadcast meteorologist to part-time. I only work about 10 days a month. It's made my life so much better. I can't even begin to tell you. My happiness has shot up. I mean, it's just huge, right? This is something that not only never occurred to me to do, I wouldn't have even had the confidence to pitch it or negotiate it with my boss. And being in this community and seeing all these people doing these things that are a little bit outside the box gives you that encouragement and gives you these great ideas. And you go for it. And it's just, it's been life-changing. And I love to travel, and maybe a little bit more than my husband. So he's like, maybe go with your friends on that one. I'm like, all right. So again, I'm a planner. I love to travel. A lot of people in the Phi community have the time and also like to travel. So I'm like, well, let me just start inviting these people to go. And it's turned into a whole big thing. So now I have Phi Friends Travel, a company I started in fall 2024, and we do 3 big international, you know, bucket listy kind of trips every year. And it's been incredible. So I'm also growing more community that way. I have all my little travel buddies I've met through the community. They're not just people that I know. Like, I have more than 1,000 people in this community that have signed up to be on my email list that want to know about these trips. So every time I go on one, I make new friends. I've got friends all over the world now. It's freaking incredible. And it's all because I took that step and went to my first in-person thing, because somebody dragged me to that. Eric Cooper, if you listen to a lot of podcasts, he's kind of well known in the community, Mr. 72T, he's known as. He was like, I just went to this camp and it was so cool and I really think you'd like it. You should go with me to the next one. And I'm like, all right. I don't think I ever would have done it if he wouldn't have given me that little push. And now I'm kind of obsessed, to be real.
Yeah, I would say you're obsessed. That's so
you would
cool.
say? Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
When it's so cool to see like the progression, and then, you know, just generally like you found your community after, I mean, you were in your late 40s when you found yeah. it, and then it like changed the trajectory of how your life is going and how you spend your time. You mentioned your happiness level, and I mean, you have more free time and there's like a little bit more of a clear path, and you're really, I mean, you created from complete scratch, right? Phi Friends Travel.
Sure.
And it was exactly, and you built it exactly how you wanted to do it, where you're like, I want to go on these kind of trips and I want to do whatever X number per year and this many people. So it's pretty cool to be able to do that.
I created what I wish existed. I wanted to travel more. These are the people I wanted to travel with, and nothing really existed that would facilitate that as much as I wanted to do and the kind of travel that I wanted to do. I wanted to do a lot of like land-based travel, not like I wasn't interested in going to a place and just staying in that one place and having content. I love those things, don't get me wrong. But I wanted to actually go to a place and travel around and have those experiences with other five people. So I don't really do any content because here's the deal. We have long bus rides, train rides. Those conversations are going to happen. You know, if I'm in some incredible foreign city, I don't want to take time away to sit in a room and talk about safe withdrawal rates, right? So I just wanted to travel around and see the world and have these epic experiences with these people. And there wasn't really anything that facilitated allowing that to happen yet. So I was like, well, again, I'll just do it. I'll create what I wish existed in the world because why not? What's the worst that could happen?
And it's part, I mean, there's enough people in the community where like other people will appreciate that lack of programming. Some people may see it as a flaw, but I mean, the point is you built what you wanted. You weren't thinking, let's do campfire on the road. You were like, I see a different vision and I want it to be like this, which is,
yeah.
There's plenty of room. And if, I mean, I'm sure if somebody wanted to, like, you know, the recent beer cruise, essentially it was the Belgium and Amsterdam cruise. I mean, people do beer stuff, right? So if someone was like, I want to talk about 72 teas, then they would certainly have the opportunity to get together 10 people that want to talk about it.
There were lots of conversations sitting around on the ship over beers, discussing financial topics, right? It just happens more organically on my trips. It's not scheduled in.
Let's move on to the thing that maybe some of the retirees from those stories ran into is just we need to make it a priority to make new friends, especially if you're an early retiree. I mean, it's probably a good practice just in general. And I know for me, it's probably a bit of convenience. Like I was, you know, I make friends relatively easily. So like when I worked with people, I was friends with people that I worked with. Maybe I would, you know, not exactly work with people directly and become friends with them, but it was more of a location-based thing. So I would meet people in the office or something, or at the gym or something like that. And when you retire, it's really easy to like sit in your routine and not go to new things. Like you mentioned, Kristen, you were like, I'm going to go to an in-person thing. And then you start meeting more people. And I imagine you have dozens more friends than you did before. And it's
absolutely
all new people.
Oh my gosh. Right? It's incredible. Yeah. I have friends all over because like, you know, I'm getting ready to go to Oregon for the first time in a couple months. I never knew anybody in Oregon, but just by doing all this travel, I now have friends that have come on my trips from there and they can give me all the things and all the details. And it's really amazing. Yeah. It's really quite awesome.
And it takes time. You know, we'll meet someone. Let's say you go to a Choose Fi meetup. You'll meet some folks, maybe have a few minutes to chat. Maybe you actually talk to them for a while. Maybe it's like 30 or 40 minutes. It's a pretty light connection overall. And one thing that I think about is how to make the connections a little bit deeper. So these could be potentially like longer hikes or side trips. Maybe you go on a five friends travel longer trip. So you're around people, there's downtime where you could hang out. This one thing with long hikes, like there's downtime as you're walking, you're not in a rush. You're not sitting at a table or a bar or brewery or something like that. You're walking for a couple hours. You got campfire, economy. There's so many different ways, but it takes time and you have to put in the hours. Like, do you have any, we didn't talk about this beforehand, but do you have any strategies like that where you're like, how can I be better friends with this person?
Sure.
Spend the time.
There have definitely been people that I've met. And I'm like, ooh, I really want, this person's cool, right? I really want to get to know this person better. So you go out and have coffee. Ooh, we should get coffee. Right. And that can turn into like a 3-hour thing pretty easy. I mean, it has. Yeah. And also, let's go out to dinner. Right. Especially if they're in your local like groups, you can do those kinds of things. We have a couple of ladies that get together regularly that do go on long walks together. We have plenty of time to talk during those. So, but also just continuing to go back to your local group, even if it's just 30 minutes here and there, you know, that builds over time and you develop relationships that way too.
Yeah. And I think you and I met at Economy a few years ago. And then there's a little time to hang out there. And then I can't remember, did we reach out and say, hey, we need to make it a priority? Did you pass through town? Was it another Camp 5 that we hung out?
You came through here one time with your wife. We got together. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
And then we just keep seeing each other at like camps and economy. And then you invited me on the show. So it just kind of has grown over time.
Okay. Yeah. And then, I mean, now, like, we don't remember it. One thing that I, you know, I encourage people to maybe give this a shot. I think I was just like, hey, we haven't caught up in a while. And I knew you had gone on some adventures and I went on some. And I was like, well, just, we're not going to record anything, but we literally scheduled time to talk for like an hour. And I think maybe we've done it a couple times. Sometimes there's a little show planning at the end, but usually it's just us to like set aside time.
And we do it in this format so we can like see each other. Cause I don't know. Yeah. I think that adds a nice little special touch, but
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to do a little bit more of that, although I'm a little bit behind. But yeah, there's a few people where I'm like, let's schedule a call because it's really easy to not see someone or talk to them for a year. It's hard to coordinate, you know, travel. Like if we were passing through St. Louis again, strong chance you're going to be out of town. I mean, we would have to plan a little bit harder.
You know, a couple of things on that. I remember when I first got involved in the community and I would hear that, oh, I'm going on this road trip and I'm just going to go from town to town and hang out with all my 5 friends around the country. And I just remember being like, huh? Where'd you meet these people? Like, you barely know them and you're going to go hang out at their house? But like, that's a real thing. It's really common. You know, I remember when I first heard that people would go to like HQ or whatever there in Longmont. And I was like, that sounds really cool. Like, how'd you make that happen? And then like, next thing I know, I'm like, oh, Mindy and Carl are like coming out. I'm like, awesome. I'm there. You know, it's the best thing ever. But I remember thinking, that's so, I don't know. I might've thought it was a little weird at first, but now that I'm in it, I'm like, this is the best thing ever. You just, if anywhere I go in the country, I often know somebody that's there and I just hit them up and say, hey, let's go get lunch or whatever. It's the best. I love staying in touch with people that way. But you know, another way of doing it, you mentioned these calls. I had never experienced this before, but I have a friend who now will occasionally call me and leave me really long voicemails on the camera and through WhatsApp. And that's so, it makes me so happy because I get to see her and listen to her voice and she shares, she just catches me up on her life. Maybe we don't have time to get on the call at the same time. And she just leaves me this really long, you know, 7 or 8 minute long voicemail. It's the best. That's another really good thing to do.
Yeah.
I need to do that more. I need to take that note from her playbook and do more of that.
And also when you're traveling, it's cool. You're like, hey, I just had some downtime when I'm hanging out in Turkey or whatever. And then there's a very cool, novel background and stuff going on around you.
I should do that. Thank you for that idea.
You're welcome. All right. So now brace yourself, everyone. And this is the introvert challenge that we'll extend to folks out there. So I mentioned before, I think I used to call myself an introvert. I think maybe some people think it's cool. I get that sense that people are like, oh, I'm an introvert. But I'm not really sure why they think it's cool. Maybe it's fine. I'm not calling anyone out specifically. But there's a pretty interesting study. So this is Nicholas Epley's commuter train study. Researchers went to a busy commuter train station in Chicago and divided morning commuters into 3 distinct experimental groups. So number one, this is a solitary group. So they were instructed to actively keep to themselves, focus on their phones and books, and just sit in silence like a normal morning commute. And
like most people do, right?
Yep. You just sit there, mind your own business. Group two, this is the social group. They explicitly instructed them to do the exact opposite. They had to strike up a genuine friendly conversation with whoever sat down next to them. And then group three, this is the control group. They were instructed to just do whatever they normally do on their commute. And quick note, I think they paid them with like $5 Starbucks gift cards or something like that to get people to actually participate.
So before the train took off, researchers asked all these participants to predict 2 things. How awkward is this conversation going to be? But also how happy they would feel afterwards. So Almost everybody predicted that forcing a conversation with a stranger would be deeply awkward. I get that. I would probably predict the same thing. They predicted it would be uncomfortable and that it would make their commute worse, and that they assumed staying isolated and on their phone or reading their book would just be more pleasant. So I guess our question to you is, if you consider yourself an introvert, I mean, is that the same thing that you're thinking right now?
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned, Kristen, like, you're like, like that would make me a little anxious. Like,
yeah.
Are you the kind of person that would strike up a conversation if something relevant happens? Like somebody walked in and they have the same exact book as you,
okay,
or something like
yes.
that.
Yes. If there was a okay. reason to talk to them, yes. But just a random stranger comes and sits down beside me and there's nothing connecting us in any way. Like, yeah, no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I don't talk to people on planes. Like, I just don't. Yeah. No.
Ugh. Interesting. So, and I think generally, it depends on the situation and my mood and many other things. But I will share that, so I was fairly introverted, I would say. And in high school, fairly quiet, very nerdy, and had horrible acne. Full head of hair, though. Kind of crazy, but
horrible. We need to share pictures of that sometime, Doug. I would like to see
that'll
that.
That'll be fun. I should be able to get my senior picture to share it on the screen here. But I was going to say, I explicitly wanted to try to meet ladies. Be straight and honest and say, I wanted to be more conversational. So I literally would force myself to chat with ladies and get over the fear of it. And it was helpful just in general, because you're not going to melt or anything like that. Usually nothing happens, but it's slightly more interesting. But it was certainly an anxiety producing situation, especially back then, but super helpful to do. Yeah. Any comments or observations?
Well, I was just going to say, when I go to Phi events, I obviously make an effort to talk to everybody because I know that we have that commonality, right? But in the real world, outside of the Phi community, in my daily life, I'm usually not talking to strangers.
Yeah. One thing that I try to do, I'll chat with, especially folks at the gym, the people that check you in and just other employees there. I try to be lightly social.
Also just being friendly. That's just being cordial though, right? Holding a door for somebody and saying thank you or...
Right. Yes, it is. However, people are extremely wrapped up on their phone or whatever. And very few people chat compared to 10 or 15 years ago.
True.
And actually, again, I hear people, they're like, I want to reduce all interactions with people. They're like, I don't want to talk to this person. I want to go to self-checkout. I don't want to talk to anyone. And...
For better or worse, society allows us to do that a lot more now, which is really unfortunate, and which is what I think is leading to this loneliness epidemic that these studies proves exists.
And it doesn't take, it doesn't take much. Just a light social interaction is usually okay. So now that we've shared a little bit and we've asked you out there, so as an introvert out there, are you thinking if you were forced to have a conversation, are you getting a little anxious right now? So, Kristen, what was the actual result?
So the prediction was 100% wrong. These commuters that were forced to talk to strangers actually reported significantly higher levels of happiness, positivity, and well-being after the ride compared to those people who sat in silence. Furthermore, the strangers they talked to also reported having a much better commute. They weren't agitated that a stranger talked to them. Who knew?
And the extroverts that were in the group and they were asked to not talk to anyone, they were less happy. So exactly the opposite. And it kind of makes sense. I mean, they were suppressing their normal activity to chat with people. And I think we know folks that they walk into a room or they end up talking to a bunch of people at whatever restaurant they go to, just strangers that they don't know. So I will point out that introverts apparently get a little upset when they hear this. And
now, based on what? How do you know this? Is this just people you've had conversations with?
So this was another podcast, and the person mentioned that they got a lot of angry emails. So I will observe and see if I get emails where people are like, I think you're wrong. So, but I will give you all a challenge out there. Introverts, extroverts. The whole point of this episode, if you made it this far, is like community and socializing is a good, positive thing, even when we think that it's not going to be. Usually it's better. So I extend the challenge if you wish to check it out and talk to strangers, try to strike up a little conversation. As a tip, you could say, hey, I really like your shirt or hat, or give them a normal, non-sexual compliment.
Yes, please.
Yeah. So I could see this could go off the rails if you take it too far. But say, hey, those are really cool glasses. I like your hair, or I like the lack of hair on your head, sir. Something funny is good too. Yeah, funny is always good, non-offensive. Do you have tips for striking up a little conversation just randomly?
This is something I'm going to have to work on, Doug. Yeah, I mean, if there's something about them visually that triggers you, like book they're carrying, or for women, like you like their purse. I don't know, something they're wearing. I need work in this area.
Yeah, and natural is good. And I was going to say, like, if I saw a lady, I could also say, hey, I really like your purse. I have the same one. And that's probably kind of funny, right? I just got the same one. So it could be complete nonsense. And then that could be basically the interaction. But like, you get a laugh. It's pretty good. So any closing thoughts, Kristen?
I hope are people able to comment on all of this, Doug? Is that how it's set up? Because I want to hear people's comments and thoughts.
Yeah, you know what? On YouTube, people can comment, but most people actually listen. So send us an email, and I can get the emails to you, Kristen. But yeah, it's doug@milehighfi.com.
I'm really curious as to not only what people think, but maybe some experiments that they tried and the results that they're getting. It's really interesting stuff.
Yep, and I was going to say I can give it a shot today as well. Like I don't clam up in a shell or anything, but depending on the mood and like whatever else I have going on, I may be a little more or less social. But yeah, you could email me and Kristen. You're over at fivefriendstravel.com.
So yeah, Kristen@fivefriendstravel.com is my email too, so it's easy.
Okay. Yep. So you could email us both once you go out there and give it a try. And I mean, it's the kind of thing you could do not only every single day, but you could do it all the time. And just kind of see like, hey, are you in a better mood this day?
Because I'm going to the pharmacy a little bit later. So maybe I'll try to strike up a friendly conversation with the person checking me out. Also, have some self-awareness. Don't do that if there's a really long line, right? Because that's just annoying. But also, I'm going to the gym later. So maybe I won't wear earbuds. We'll see what happens.
The gym is a perfect place. Yeah, it's a good way to... It's kind of filtering, right? Like similar to the Phi community. It's like people go to the gym, they care about fitness, and they have free time in the whatever you work out. So you may have some things in common. So, all right. Well, Kristen, it's always fun to catch up. This was a really good episode. I feel like we can really expand on this topic more and more, but I think it's something that you and I have both thought a lot about over the last few years. So I appreciate you joining me.
Absolutely. Community and connections, I can't speak higher about it. Like I think my prior Finding Phi life, I don't think I knew what I was missing, right? But then once I got involved and by developing this community, how much more happy that I am, like it's really extraordinary. You got to just give it a whirl. Do it. Just do it.
All right. Thanks, Kristen. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Phi podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell.
maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week.
You obviously are an avid traveler. Where have you been lately? Any highlights that you want to share?
Oh, man. Through Five Friends Travel, I took a group of 38 on a river cruise out of Amsterdam during tulip time. We spent about a week tooling through the Netherlands and Belgium. Our good mutual friend Carl Jensen was aboard. He was sporting some of his Fi wear, got some great pictures. It was a really good time. I wasn't sure. I was a little stressed. It's a lot of people. I was like, how is this going to work? Is everybody going to get along? But typical Fi magic, right? If you have that thread in common, you find you have a lot of other threads in common and everybody got along. A lot of these people obviously already knew each other. I mean, that's how it works in this community, right? But really good time. Yeah. And so busy, leaving in less than 2 weeks to take a group to Turkey. There's 13 of us. And most of those people I haven't even met yet. I know three people in the group. No, four. I know four people in the group. So a lot of new friends. So that'll be fun. And then between now and then, I'm launching this trip to Japan, which people are super excited about. I'm having to do two back-to-back tours because there's so much interest. By the time this podcast comes out, I'm pretty certain it'll be sold out. We're going to put 20 people on two different tours, so a total of 40 people to go to Japan for an 11-day trip. This is going to be in May 2027. So if you're hearing me talk about it, and you're like, oh, that sounds awesome. And you're part of the Fi community. Probably going to be sold out, but you can go to the website and check it out, fivefriendstravel.com, and reach out and we can put you on a waiting list.
Gotcha. Yeah, super awesome. And I think the cruise is an interesting, obviously there's other cruises that happen like with Amberley's group and there, it's different. It's a different kind of setup overall where you don't have programming specifically. But right. I was going to say the one cool part is like it's a choose your own adventure thing. So maybe you want to go on the excursions with the cruise, or maybe you want to go off on your own with like two or three other people and go to a specific restaurant or a specific bar or whatever.
That actually worked out nicely because I think if all 38 of us were together all the time, that would have been kind of challenging to get to know everybody. Yeah. So because it was choose your own adventure, you know, 10 people were off doing that, five or six were off doing that, and then you could really have those great conversations and get to know people. So it worked out nicely because most of my trips, I mean, so far, the largest one I had done was 17 people in Morocco. I mean, Japan, I'm capping at 20. So when you're really together, like 24/7, I don't want it to be any bigger than that. I think it makes it much more challenging to have those great conversations and get to know people. So on the cruise, it doesn't make any sense to limit it. I mean, there's going to be 150 people on the ship, whether or not they're 150 of my people or not. So as long as there were spots available, you know, let them book it. So we had 38, but, because everybody was split up, it worked out really nice. It was good. Have you heard anything about it? Because I know some of your friends were on it.
A little bit. Everybody seemed to have a really good time. One thing that happened, I can't remember if I was specifically out of town, but like a bunch of people went on the trip and then they got back and saw them at different events where we didn't get to talk too much. Then time passed and then they didn't mention too much about it because it was like 3 weeks later or a month later, a new trip's coming up, right? So good feedback overall. No one was like, oh yeah, I'm not going to do it again. They were just like, it was awesome. So much beer. Food was good. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So.
There was a big thing about the Belgian beer. I don't drink beer. I didn't know that was a big deal, but I guess beer people know that's a big deal. So I made everybody custom little Five Friends travel beer mugs so they could have them on the ship.
Oh, cool.
And there were lots of beer tastings and good time was had by all, even us non-beer drinkers.
Awesome.